This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Friday, January 31st. This might be our final segment of daily impeachment coverage. We won't know for sure until later, but the head count seems to be shaping up that way. For those of you who are hearing this in the podcast version, Impeachment, a Daily Podcast, this is probably the last episode, and you will see this feed renamed, probably starting Monday, as we will continue talking politics with you and with guests in this crucial political year of 2020. We'll do a lot of daily coverage, as we've done with impeachment, but without the mandate to cover a daily procedural, as the impeachment process has been, we'll have more freedom to have both breaking news conversations and deeper dive conversations that we hope will be helpful and illuminating across the political spectrum during this defining year. We'll talk breaking news, we'll talk historical context, we'll try some culture war peace talks, lots of different things. So podcast listeners, look for our new name of this Talking Politics podcast feed beginning next week, assuming the trial ends as we now expect. Senator Lamar Alexander has now crystallized the debate that many of us always thought the Trump-Ukraine scandal would inevitably arrive at, and that is, he did it. It's obvious. It's proven. He shook down Ukraine for his personal gain. But is it bad enough for the political death penalty, impeachment, and removal from office? Not by the voters, but by the Congress of the United States. Now, Lamar Alexander, 79 years old, retiring from the Senate at the end of this year. He's been in since 2003, I think. A traditionalist, a Senate institutionalist, close to Mitch McConnell, but no big fan of Trump, concludes Trump did it, but the voters should decide if it warrants removal from office this November. We will see as today goes on where the rest of the Senate lands, but as we speak, it seems extremely likely that they will vote not to remove Trump. And listeners, it's Lamar Alexander, not Susan Collins or Mitt Romney, who it looks like will go down in history for what he did in the Trump impeachment. We welcome now Politico congressional reporter Sarah Ferris. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for giving us some time on what is obviously a very momentous day, one way or another. Crunch time for you as a congressional reporter. So thanks so much for coming on.
Crunch time won't be for 12 hours or so, but it's going to be a long day.
Since this is a breaking story, what's the latest on the headcount or people's statements as of this morning?
So right now, I keep refreshing my email and text messages to see if my colleagues have gotten any word from Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. She's really the one unknown that we are still waiting on among Senate Republicans. And we often lump together Lisa Murkowski with Susan Collins as these swing seats who have the only power really to actually force Mitch McConnell's hand because they threaten to vote with the Democrats. And Murkowski's influence is a lot less than it would have been last night had Senator Lamar Alexander not announced that he would vote no on witnesses. But there is still a slight chance if Murkowski is a yes on witnesses, and then we go to a 50-50 tie on the floor. And then it would be this really awkward scenario where the Chief Justice has to weigh in. So this is kind of the math game that we're playing right now. The actual trial will not begin until 1 p.m. So she does have several hours to put this out there.
So if it winds up 50-50, Chief Justice Roberts, as presiding officer, can choose to vote yes and break the tie in favor of witnesses, choose to vote no and break the tie against witnesses, or he could do nothing and say, it's not my place. And then if it is 50-50, it would lose no witnesses because 50-50 in the Senate
That's
is
right,
a
it would
defeat.
Fail.
Yeah.
Right.
Any indication where Warren will come down, where Roberts will come down on what his proper role is?
I just do not think it's likely that we see a surprise here from Chief Justice Roberts. This is not something that he wants to be remembered for in the history books. This kind of move would be extremely contentious. And again, this is just the witnesses' vote. This is not any kind of vote to actually move to acquit Trump. Of course, the Chief Justice would not have be taking any stance on that. Not that that is in question at all. But I just don't see Roberts breaking precedent and weighing in here in a way that would force Senate to summon witnesses. I think losing Alexander last night, Democrats really have no shot here, and they'll be forced to spend the rest of today coming up with some floor procedures. They can force several, they can basically spend all day debating more amendments on the resolution that we're going to see to actually wrap this entire trial up. So Democrats right now are huddling and trying to figure out exactly what they want to do on the floor. Do they want to, how do they want to drag this out? Do they want to try and make this last until 2 a.m., 3 a.m.? And I think we're probably going to see that.
By proposing what kinds of things if witnesses have been defeated?
Well, they'll just force everybody to go on record again, the same types of amendments that we saw at the very beginning. These are not going to be things we expect Republicans to vote for. You know, Democrats are just doing everything they can to make this as politically painful as possible for Republicans.
In other words, they could put out like a separate vote on calling John Bolton, and that'll have to be defeated 50-50 or whatever the count is, a separate vote on calling Mick Mulvaney, a separate vote on subpoenaing the notes from Ambassador William Taylor, which is one of the things they want, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see what the Senate parliamentarian has to say. There's some, as you know, the Senate rules are very particular, and they have to make sure the particular amendments are germane and all those sorts of things. But that's exactly what Democrats want to do. They want to use the national polling that shows that the American people want witnesses and hammer Republicans, force them to go on the record over and over again, especially since this debate could easily go primetime. This is a Friday night. This is going to be times where CNN, MSNBC, Fox News are broadcasting this trial. Democrats aren't about to give up and let this vote happen before dinner time. They want to take advantage of the fact that people will be paying attention for this final day and want to make sure that the American people know that the Republicans are voting against witnesses.
Nobody watches TV on Friday night. All right. I'll read a few key lines now from Lamar Alexander's written statement. He wrote, "There is no need for more evidence to prove something that has already been proven. It was inappropriate for the president to ask a foreign leader to investigate his political opponent and to withhold United States aid to encourage that investigation. When elected officials inappropriately interfere with such investigations, it undermines the principle of equal justice under the law. But the Constitution does not give the Senate the power to remove the president from office and ban him from this year's ballot simply for actions that are inappropriate." So those, I think, are the key lines from Lamar Alexander's statement from last night. What's the reaction been like from any camp?
I'm sorry, from what?
From any camp.
Well, this is really the response that Democrats, if they're not going to be able to get witnesses, they want to see Republicans say something like this, where they think this behavior is inappropriate. And for Senator Alexander to basically confirm all the facts of this case and say he does believe Democrats made their arguments in a valid way, and he does believe their arguments. I mean, he's saying Democrats won the case. They just didn't actually prove that it's impeachable. So it's complicated, right? So, you know, if Republicans do actually go against Trump and saying that his behavior was inappropriate, that will be Democrats are going to try to make that message last through the election. And there's been a lot of Republicans that have not said which way or another they fall in these camps. Do they think Trump's behavior was appropriate and aren't going to go near the impeachable question? Or do they think it was inappropriate but had to make the decision that it is not impeachable? So I think if there are large numbers of Republicans who condemn the president's behavior, that's going to be something that Democrats will be seizing on for weeks, if not months.
No doubt. And I'm curious if there's a reaction from the White House yet, because as you're getting at, Trump has spent the last 4 months resisting the label of bad but not impeachable, insisting that senators rally around his unlikely declaration that the call was perfect and he did absolutely nothing wrong. And we've seen senators, as well as Trump's lawyers, twist themselves into pretzels, despite all the evidence, to try to argue that his behavior was perfect. So has the White House reacted to Lamar Alexander yet? Because in a way, Trump wins with this, and in a way, Trump loses.
That's right. I mean, the president, of course, cannot wait to be exonerated. He can't wait to wave it in Democrats' faces that they were not able to convict him in the Senate. That said, he is going to have to choose how to react to these responses from Republicans. It's certainly going to be a mixed bag for him, regardless of what happens. That said, I think the administration, Trump's inner circle, would like him to move past this as quickly as possible. There's some reporting by my colleagues at Politico that his advisors are telling him not to mention impeachment during the State of the Union on Tuesday. So this could be a huge moment for the president to essentially take a victory lap and rub it in Democrats' faces. But they would like him to pivot to his official reelection campaign for 2020 and talk about the things he would like to do in his second term. If he does, in fact, skip over any impeachment mention, I think that would be quite a feat for the president. I don't know if I'm expecting that, but we're going to have to see if the president is able to restrain himself from going after Republicans who do say that it's inappropriate. Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, Lamar Alexander so far have been critical of the president's actions. We don't know yet if there will be more in the party who are willing to go on the record criticizing him.
Let's take some phone calls. Judy, hi, you're on.
Hi. If they fall short of removing the president, could they at least censure him?
Good question. Is it just remove or acquit, or can there be a series of votes that state in effect what Lamar Alexander is stating, like a vote to declare that he did what he's accused of, but then a separate vote to punish him only by censure, as Judy asks, or in some other way?
Yeah, so this is a question that my colleagues and I have been discussing basically since Alexander's statement came out yesterday, asking around to various offices about what they think about censure. Is this something that's being discussed? And we don't know the answer to that yet. I think having the statement came out last night around 11:30, so I think people are still mobilizing and processing. If you think back to the 90s during Clinton's impeachment, Senator Dianne Feinstein was actually leading the charge to have a censure resolution against Clinton after the impeachment trial failed and ended in acquittal. And so there is some precedent to that. That said, I think this is a very different, the politics are very different for this. The Republicans are extremely united in their defense of President Trump. Democrats are extremely united in punishing Trump in any way possible. And so there's a lot less of that middle ground that we saw during Clinton, when even members of his own party were eager to separate themselves from him and go on the record condemning his behavior. So I don't know about censure. I did some reporting a few months back when there were actually members of the House who were trying to there were some bipartisan conversations about whether censure would be a possibility, perhaps even instead of impeachment. Those talks did not go very far. They were pretty limited. So I do not expect censure to gain ground. That said, this entire impeachment trial has been full of twists and turns, and I would be remiss to say that it's over now. So
maybe that's
to wait and see.
Maybe that's one of the ways the Democrats will tie it up later, that they'll try to propose two separate votes, one to put people on the record to declare whether the president did what he's accused of doing. Lamar Alexander, Republican from Tennessee, says it was proven. He used the word proven. And then a separate vote to decide whether to remove him. Is it possible for the Democrats to at least put that into play?
I don't know yet. I believe it with censure, you would require a majority vote compared to a 2/3 vote for actually expelling the president. I think that's certainly a possibility, but there's so many hours left in the day, and we don't know yet. I think that there would be some Democrats who would be interested in that, with the idea of these three, four senators right now who have sort of hinted, or if not said outright, that they think the president's behavior is inappropriate. That's really mm-hmm. still not enough votes, but because there's also the chance that there are some Democrats who don't go on the record. There's not been a ton of attention, but there are some Democrats in red states who may not actually vote to convict Trump. That's still sort of up in the air. So a lot of moving parts at this point still.
As they head toward the end here, whatever happened in the last 2 days, of senators' questions and the lawyers' answers may start to fade quickly as just footnotes. But let me replay a few moments from yesterday that may live on for various reasons. First is Senator Rand Paul's attempt to publicly name the person he believes to be the whistleblower. He stepped up to ask a question and was recognized by the Chief Justice.
Mr. Chief Justice.
Senator from Kentucky.
I have a question to present to the desk for the House Manager Schiff and for the President's Counsel.
But instead of then reading Paul's question, as he read all the other questions that were submitted, Chief Justice Roberts said this.
The presiding officer declines to read the question as submitted.
So, Sarah, the Chief Justice made a policy decision. He refused to read a question that named the alleged whistleblower. Do you know on what basis Roberts felt that he had the authority to do that?
Yes, so this whistleblower, basically, there had been 48 hours of discussion about this. Senator Rand Paul had been trying to bring this up earlier. And basically, there were senior Republicans, including Roberts. There were the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other top Republicans had also been stressing to their Republican conference that they should not be disclosing the whistleblower's identity. So Roberts had signaled to Republican senators earlier this week. He actually on Tuesday, he signaled that he wouldn't allow the whistleblower's name to be mentioned. And then that was stressed again by Mitch McConnell. So it's not like it was a unilateral decision by Roberts. Also, this is pretty standard national policy. There are laws in on the books to protect whistleblowers. So this is really in keeping with federal law here.
There was also a question from Senator Elizabeth Warren that was intended to put the Chief Justice on the spot. Here's her question that he had to read aloud.
The question from Senator Warren is for the House managers. At a time when large majorities of Americans have lost faith in government, does the fact that the Chief Justice is presiding over an impeachment trial in which Republican senators have thus far refused to allow witnesses or evidence contribute to the loss of legitimacy of the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the Constitution?
Ouch. No response from Roberts, though, on the content?
So he did not audibly respond. But when looking back at the video, which you actually cannot see from the press gallery, you can't see his face. He sort of stares at Senator Warren for a couple extra seconds. And just to add, Democrats, the House Democratic impeachment managers were not happy that this question was asked. There was a concerted effort by House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff and some of the other managers to be extremely deferential to the Chief Justice throughout their arguments and throughout the question and answer session. So this was really out of character, out of the character that Democrats were hoping to portray. Again, Roberts is the potentially decisive vote on witnesses if there were to be a 50-50 tie. And no one is really expecting that he would break the tie in favor of Democrats, as I laid out earlier. But the Democratic impeachment managers aren't exactly looking to give him an excuse not to. So this sort of shook up what Democrats were trying to do here.
And one last little sideshow. For the last response last night, it looked like Adam Schiff was going to close for the Democrats, as he has been the lead manager through this process. But Gerald Nadler seemed to get to the mic first and closed with a strident argument against the idea of blocking witnesses.
Well, that's like saying that in a bank robbery, the DA announces that he's proved his case. He's had all the witnesses. And then an eyewitness shows up, and he shouldn't be allowed to testify because, after all, the DA was sure he proved his case first. That's absurd. Any 10-year-old knows it's absurd. And that's the president's case against witnesses.
So, Sarah, did something happen there between Nadler and Schiff?
So there's a lot of backstory here we don't quite have time to get into. But basically, the House Judiciary Chairman in past impeachments has been the lead. That would be Jerry Nadler. For many reasons, the impeachment case in the House has actually been led mostly by Chairman Adam Schiff. That's partly a leadership decision. It's partly kind of the strengths of each personality. Basically, there's been some drama on the House side. And last night we saw from the video that was shown from the Senate cameras, we saw that Chairman Adam Schiff had been getting up to answer the question. And then basically Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler beat him to the lectern, and you could hear Schiff saying, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. So maybe there was a little bit of miscommunication. I think Nadler, you know, he's one of the strongest voices on this in the House besides Schiff. And a lot of the questions had been answered by Schiff. And I think Nadler was looking to make a point. And I think he made that point. And, you know, it is one of those moments that you kind of see the personalities break out in these really heated moments and these really intense high stakes moments that we saw. And that was just one of the ways to see how the House managers have been working behind the scenes.
Making the point that impeachment belongs to the Judiciary Committee, not ultimately the Intelligence Committee, which Adam Schiff leads. But was his scolding tone different from what you might have expected for a closing remark from Adam Schiff, who's really, he's certainly been passionate, but it's like he's been really trying to convince people?
Right. As what I was saying earlier, you know, Democrats have tried to be very deferential to Republicans who might be on the fence. But, you know, that's a tone that Adam Schiff has been trying really hard to strike. I think members of the Judiciary Committee inherently have a different view on this. The Judiciary Committee is far more political and is a little bit more hardline in some of these political beliefs. There's the arguments that they make differ slightly from those who are in the intelligence community. And so I think we saw a little bit of that shift. But what Nadler was saying, I think, is giving voice to what a lot in the Democratic caucus have been thinking. You know, they just are frustrated, and they don't see how Republicans don't see the need for witnesses that they do. So, you know, it's definitely, I don't think Nadler was going out of line or anything. I think maybe Schiff and perhaps Democratic leadership would have wanted to have a more sweeping, lofty case to end the night on. But they're going to have a chance to do some of these closing arguments on today, on Friday. And I think we'll be seeing Adam Schiff make those on the floor.
Sarah Ferris, congressional correspondent for Politico. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.